Good afternoon. Glad everybody is still hanging in there on a long day. My name's Dr. Lori Anderco, and I want to give credit to the other two team project members, my son, Chris Anderco, and Carrie Fahey. Before I start, first of all, there's no financial relationships to disclose. Before I start, I want to ask how many of you received any training at all on environmental health issues in your program, whether it was nursing or some other health discipline? Okay. How many of you are aware of environmental health risks related to fish consumption? Good. And how many of you eat fish? All right. Well, so something of interest, hopefully, for all of you here. I also want to personally thank Dr. Henry Anderson, who's the Chief Medical Officer of the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services. He and I were partners in many different projects, and he called me up one day and said, "We need someone to pull this together. Are you willing to do it?" And I said, "Sure, okay." And so we were funded through the EPA for this project. The good news is that it's a sustainable project, and we're looking at most likely getting some more funding to expand it a little bit. So some of you already know about the risks related to fish consumption and mercury toxicity, only a couple of you have actually had any formal training in school. But as you all know, as busy health professionals, we often don't have the time to even participate in continuing education programs. And so the idea was really for us at the time, I started at UWM and then I moved to Georgetown midway through this project, but was really to create something that was informative but was also interesting for folks who have only a few minutes every day to listen and learn about a health topic. As you know, those of you that are out in the community, there are a lot of questions asked by parents, patients, and families about the benefits and risks of fish consumption. You also know that there's a lot of confusion. One week, and I was going to put up all these headlines from the Times and the Post, and you know, one week it's great to eat fish and your kids will be really smart, and then the next week there's terrible news. The reality is there's a lot of politics in food and food safety, and there are a lot of stakeholders, and so there are a lot of conflicting media messages. And so the idea was, and there's also conflicting guidance from the federal agencies as well. So the idea was to get something that was a simple message off to health professionals that could also be shared with patients and families out in the community. We know this is important because more and more people are eating fish. It's increased dramatically over the past 20 years. Why do we eat fish? Who eats fish and why do you eat fish? Omega-3 fatty acids, right? It's considered a brain food. It's a good source of protein. Most of it is low in fat. And so we encourage people to eat fish. The reality is that nearly all, that's a politically charged statement, but basically all fish has methylmercury in it, just varying amounts. What we know about mercury is that it's highly toxic and it poses a threat to human health, particularly children, and particularly children in utero, because of the windows of opportunity for growth and development. How does it get into our food supply? Well, primarily from coal-fired plants. The electricity that we use is created primarily from coal-fired plants. Once that coal is burned, it gets released into the air and it gets converted to methylmercury. So I don't expect you to read the small print, but the plume goes through the air, it goes down into the water, it gets methylated, the mercury, the plankton consume it, and it goes up through the food chain until the birds and the wild animals and grandpa catches the fish, and then they get their daily dose of methylmercury. We know since Minamata Bay, way back in the 1950s, of the long-term effects of methylmercury exposure. For adults, we get tend to see pins and needles in the extremities, ataxia, generalized weakness, memory loss, blurry vision, diminished hearing, and loss of appetite. There's a picture here of the Mad Hatter, because the Mad Hatter was actually a victim of methylmercury poisoning. They would use mercury to put the horsehairs together to make hats, and after time and breathing in the fumes, they got mad. In the bottom corner are the ravages of Minamata Bay. There are still lots and lots of people who are chronically ill and deformed as a result of their moms eating fish that was highly polluted. And the upper right picture is one of the children that was born as a result of mom eating fish during the exposure from Minamata Bay. For children, as you might imagine, the symptoms are different, and in some cases quite serious, including death, and deafness, blindness, and cerebral palsy. The reason for this is because there are these windows of growth that occur through the age of 18, and so depending on when that exposure occurs, there can very well be a number of neurodevelopmental disabilities. There's a high content of mercury found in hair when you consume fish. What we're finding, and this study was done in 2005, there was just one recently done in 2009, is that the more fish you eat, actually the more likely you are to die of a heart attack. This study was funded through the American Heart Association. They're still trying to figure out what's going on with the omega-3 fatty acids and methylmercury, but the reality is that in large epidemiological studies, people die more often of heart attacks when they eat more fish. So you can find on the map where you live. Obviously, the coastal regions are at greatest risk for highest levels of mercury concentration in blood because people along the coast and along the Great Lakes eat more fish. So what's the bottom line message here in this presentation? Is that how do we advise folks about safety? How do we advise them what fish to eat, what not to eat, particularly because it's not taught in medical and nursing schools, and there's really limited training available in the area of environmental health. Many, many states have fish consumption advisories for mercury. If you live in a white state, that doesn't mean you're scot-free. That just means your state might not be testing the water for methylmercury. All water has methylmercury, fresh water and salt water. And there's three things to take away when you're thinking about fish consumption. First is the type of fish. The bigger the fish, the more methylmercury, the older the fish it is. So this guy is carrying a big fish. So guess what? There's a lot of mercury in that fish. The quantity of fish, and also how frequently you consume it. So it bioaccumulates in your system, and it doesn't go away readily. So you are dosing yourself when you eat the fish. Back in the Midwest, we love fish fries. And one serving size of fish is the size of the palm of your hand. Well, if you've ever gone to a fish fry, you have way more than that. And so part of the message is regional and letting people know that these three areas are really important, not just the size of the fish and the type of fish, but also how much and how frequently you eat it. We had a fella in Wisconsin who ate bluegills, which are really small fish, but he ate 50 a week. So that was way too many bluegill. You know, that's like a little chocolate's good, a lot is not so good. So the development and production then of this project to advise and inform health professionals was a joint partnership with the Department of Health and Family Services, EPA, a health communications firm, and then Georgetown. And the overall goal was to improve education in the area of fish consumption and methylmercury toxicity. And we ended up with topics that included epidemiology, toxicology, clinical perspectives, and risk communication. So the overall concept was, The way it was written in the proposal was that we would have voiceover PowerPoints. And the ironic thing is that I'm giving you this presentation using a PowerPoint, because what the focus group came up with was you cannot use PowerPoint, it's too boring. You've got to have something that's short and snappy and get all that information into a 3 to 5 minute media, whatever. So here I am using PowerPoint. Anyway, this is the group. I'd like to acknowledge all the people that were a part of this focus group. The folks that are in the darker purple color are the folks that became part of the core team, reviewing the content, reviewing the workbook that we developed to go to complement the series. So as I said, they said, change the delivery methods, dear God, don't use PowerPoint. And that's when I called my son, who has health communications, and I said, can you help me? Because I don't know the first thing about this. And thank God he loves his mom, so he helped out. Anyway, you should have a card with the website on it, and the website includes these four videos, and as well as the workbook. It's all free, and those are the four areas that are covered. I don't think this is going to work, but I can try. No, it can't. Okay. So there was a trailer that was developed that was sent via email listservs, as well as it's on YouTube. It's downloadable to iPhones. And at the time that this was launched, there were free CEUs, one CEU for nurses. We had very limited funding, so we couldn't do it for physicians. But if we get this additional funding, that's exactly what we're going to be doing. We use art and social theory as our background for developing these media modules. We use stories and interviews to visually display that key information. We repeated those really important pieces of information, and it was really similar to what you would see in, like in 2020, that kind of format. And we wanted viewers to draw their own conclusions from the narrative, but of course, when we got to the clinical perspectives, we really had to be very specific about if someone comes in and they have these symptoms, what are you going to do and who are you going to call? The other thing that evolved as a result of the focus groups was the idea of a workbook. And it really was a great idea because the narrative followed the film script, it had a bibliography in the back, and it had also included a health questionnaire that you could adapt to your clinic setting if you wanted. We had over 100 nurses that participated and got the CEUs. We used SurveyMonkey software for that quiz to entitle them to earning the CEU, and certificates were sent online to participants. It was really difficult to get the doctors and the nurses to find consensus on clinical standards, particularly because there's very little written in the federal agency guidelines and they conflict with one another. So for example, the FDA says you can eat 12 ounces of any kind of fish, no matter how old you are, how big you are. And the EPA gives very much more conservative guidelines. And so there was a whole lot of conversation about liability and what to say and that sort of thing. We are working with a doctoral student out of the University of Washington, and we're going to be doing an update on the CEUs and the CMEs. As a result of that, we're going to be contacting folks, the original phase one group of nurses that participated, to find out more about whether they've applied this in their work setting. Post-test scores were very high. We had averaging 500 people a month over the first 3 months, and then it tapered off once the CEU started going away. We saw less action on the internet. We were able to get people in Spain, France, Germany, and Canada. We actually had some Canadian nurses that took the quiz. I don't know if you remember that was type of fish, quantity of fish, and frequency. This is one of the questions on the quiz, and it was 100%. Everybody got it. They understood that it was, those were the three top items to consider when looking at risk. So briefly, there was some confusion that remained in the clinical perspective section that didn't really surprise me because of some of the negotiations that went on before we finally filmed that, that module. You don't have to do a blood test for mercury. In fact, I've done a lot of research using hair. People like the hair better. You'd only need a few strands and it's not as invasive. You always need to do a dietary assessment when you're looking at fish consumption. Not everybody got that. There were 100%, the folks that filled out the opinion survey were very positive about it. There were many that applied this in their work settings and said so. They did it through employee education, nursing education, and patient education. I'm just citing the CDC Essential Environmental Public Health Services, that these are part of the criteria for environmental public health, and we met each and every one of these. Future recommendations is to increase the availability of contact hours for all professionals. We did have a number of public health nurses that participated in this, but we'd like to see more broader range of health professionals like nutritionists. We're going to use an in-place registration system to communicate with those participants for future expansion of this topic and other topics. The opportunities are endless, just like the credit card commercial. Obviously, it requires media expertise, and I got really lucky this time, and also funding. He was willing to do it for not a whole lot of money, and it does take a lot of time and energy to film people, to interview people, and to get it snappy. In conclusion, there's a critical need for health professional education and environmental health issues that can be addressed through short web-based media modules, which are universally accessible. We're thrilled to see the international traffic, and it was actually much greater than we expected. And just use that little card, click on, and you'll be smart about methylmercury in fish. Thanks a lot.